Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
You're listening to Mozart's Eine kleine Nacht Music. Eine kleine Nacht Music. 1787 in the Savage Nation. This is what Western civilization is all about. This is the antithesis of the barbarians that Obama seems to love so much. Listen to it. Listen to it and weep as you realize this all started. Well, let me backtrack a little bit. Let's just listen for a minute. So you see, last night I went to a cocktail party, so to speak, at a museum in San Francisco. And a museum which still displays pieces of art by some of the great masters of Western civilization in the middle of a city, San Francisco, which has dedicated itself to the destruction of all that is good about Western civilization. So as I stood there in the hall with works by the great artist Rodin, the great bronzes of Rodin, the man who created that great sculpture, the thinker, I think about what's going on. I think about the barbarians that our government seems to bend over backwards for. The throwbacks who have given the world nothing for thousands of years. The throwbacks who sit and seethe and create nothing but hatred. And as I watched the young ladies in the quartet, I stood there next to one of the Rodin sculptures, and I stood there with a glass of bad red wine, by the way, some of the poorest red wine I've had in years, but it was very cold out. And I watched the crowd of white people hovering around the buffet table as though they had not eaten in years. As the gates were open, the barbarians broke in, and the barbarians devoured the quiche and the bad wine and the Swedish meatballs and the grapes and the cheese. I couldn't believe it. These are white people over 50, 60 years old, clamoring as though they had just been released from a concentration camp, clamoring as though they had not eaten in 5 years. But strangely enough, I was the only one who heard the music, at least I think so, because I took my glass of bad rotgut red wine, and I stood and watched these young ladies performing. Actually, there were three young ladies and a young man. And frankly, I started to shudder at the beauty of it. It just came right through me because I was standing around some of the greatest art that I love. I've always loved the Rodin sculptures. I've always loved the Rodin Gallery here at the Palace of the Legion of Honor. And I felt honored to stand there. But as I looked up at the ceiling and felt the music coming through me and watched the young ladies literally quivering, becoming part of the instrument themselves, somehow all I could think of was that the barbarians that this government under Obama is so interested in protecting, the barbarians who the Defense Department is on the side of the barbarians instead of our soldiers who would defend these young women, all I could think about is what these barbarians would do to these young women. They would put them in burkas and they wouldn't let them play the violin. They would smash Rodin statues. They would burn the paintings of Europe. And all I could think about was, how did this start? How did my great country, this once powerful nation, degenerate to such a point? Well, I remember how. I remember how, and I'm going to give a testimony right now. This all began with the feminist movement back in the 60s as they chanted, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go." And now we have Obama. And now we have Janet Napolitano. And now we have the barbarians not at the gates, but inside the gates themselves. And what the barbarians inside the gates are trying to destroy was right there in front of my eyes. I thought of all the trial and error and research that went into making all of the great advances that Western civilization has given the world. And it made me again think about the barbarians at the gate who want to destroy all of this. It made me remember that because a single generation of weaklings and leftists had made us vulnerable to attack, and attacked the very core of our civilization, that all the towering achievements of the West could be destroyed by a bunch of fanatics whose mindset has not changed for 1,000 years. While your ancestors were building the world, the ancestors of these fanatics were sitting by their scimitars and seething, creating nothing but hatred. Hatred for women, hatred for civilization, hatred for science, hatred for liberty itself. And so as I listened to the incredible music played by these young people last night, surrounded by the great works of Rodin, I realized that the throwbacks blew up 1,500-year-old Buddhist statues in Afghanistan once they took over Afghanistan. And if the barbarians at the gate had their way, they'd smash the sculptures, they'd ban the music being played, they'd put the women in burqas, they'd burn the paintings on the walls by all of the great European masters. And now let's go back to Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik and listen to the feminists in the background of your mind chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. Then take a look at who we have in the White House. Take a look at who we have in Homeland Security. Take a look at who we have in the Defense Department. And you'll understand that they've actually won. Now, here's a story that is not directly related, but it's somewhat related to what I just said to you. I know you're caught off guard because it's not Democrats bad, Republicans good. And it's not so clearly just simply Obama bashing that you can follow the dots. You see, the difference between my show and others is that the other shows, the so-called conservative shows, are like a John Nagy painting. You have dots that you follow, and you paint in the dots. Number one, you paint in green. Number nine, you put in a yellow. Number eight, you put in a blue. Number 10, you go to another color and you put it in. And presto, you come up with a patriot, a painting called patriotism. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Don't worry, it's the Savage Nation. Stay with me. Trust, you're not on the wrong station. Just listen, I'll tell you why. Oh mio babbino caro. You are listening to the most remarkable voice I have heard in my adult life. It's a 10-year-old child named Jackie Evancho. And I saw her at the Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump's incredible facility here. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, this 10-year-old child, it was like a show, you know, and they do an amateur thing and they met her on the road and this and that. So you see this beautiful young child come out. You figure she's going to be, you know, a good amateur. And you kind of tolerate. You want to be nice to children. You know, figure it's going to be like a high-end school play type of thing, and you're just going to be polite. When she opened up and she started to sing, I couldn't believe what I was listening to. I thought it was a lip sync, number one. Then I saw, no, it was live, number two. And when she was singing Puccini's O Mio Babbino Caro, which is Oh My Dear Papa, I had tears coming to my eyes. She moved me so much, and I said to myself, I am looking at a prodigy. I am looking at the birth of a prodigy in front of my own eyes, and I started to think about something, which is child prodigies. Because we live in an age where the loser gets all of the attention. We live in an age where the idiot is held up as the role model. We live in an age when the moron is held up as the genius. We live in an age when the drug addict and treatment facilities seem to be the norm amongst the Hollywood slime. Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Rarely do we see the prodigies anymore because all of the money goes for the bottom end rather than the top end. And that's why the society is dying, amongst other reasons. And that's why China's leader can come here and basically make a mockery of this nation because they have so dumbed this country down. So when I saw and heard, rather, this genius, Jackie Evancho, 10 years old, remember now, was stirred beyond anything I had seen in entertainment. Now, remember, I'm a performing artist. You say talk show host, you can say, well, you can call me anything you want. But when you've been doing it as long as I have for over 16 years, and you have the third largest audience in the United States of America in talk radio, you have to understand that a lot of this is performing art. Whether or not it's taught at the High School of Performing Art is irrelevant. What's relevant is that talk radio, despite the fact that it's smeared by the vermin on the left, is a performing art. And so, as I say to you, when I see a 10-year-old with this phenomenal capacity for performance, I started to think about prodigies in general. And I said, all I could think of is how hard it must be to be a prodigy and how hard it must be to raise a child prodigy. You may think, oh, how wonderful it would be to have a child so gifted. How great it would be to wake up in the morning or listen to that child sing to you at night. But, you know, this follows on the heels of why Chinese mothers are superior. I saw the article about how the Chinese mothers, particularly this one that I was reading about, drills the child like a drill sergeant, makes them cry and makes them come up to the standards that she expects of them. The opposite of what American mothers do today, which is indulge the child and worry more about their self-esteem than about their performance. And so, as I say, I asked myself how hard it must be to raise a real prodigy in the society that we're living in. And then I looked into this whole issue of prodigies, and I saw an old study on intelligence, and it was done back in the 1920s, believe it or not, where a psychologist, Lewis Terman, tracked 1,500 supposedly gifted child prodigies throughout their whole lives. And he found that starting life gifted was no guarantee of success. Many prodigies floundered when they reached adulthood. Now, that's not so unusual, is it? We know it happens an awful lot where people go off the rails, right? I'm going to ask you something on the Savage Nation amongst all of the news stories. Were you yourself a child prodigy who kind of went off the rails or went wrong? Or did you know a child prodigy who basically did not succeed as an adult? I thought it's an interesting topic because I myself was not a child prodigy in anything. I was very much like Darwin or Einstein in that I was a very ordinary student. In fact, in some areas, I was not even a good student. I was too much of a dreamer myself. And people thought that, well, he'll never amount to anything. Well, you know, 28 books later and a doctorate from Berkeley and a successful career as an author and a broadcaster. And I'm not boasting. I'm telling you, nobody would have predicted this when I was a child except those who believed in me. And that would, you can count probably on two people on the back of your hand. So you can't always tell what an adult is going to be by looking at the child. You can see a prodigy at 10 singing like this, and I pray to God she becomes as famous as any diva has ever become. What if you're a poor parent with a prodigy for a child? Now, there are the stage mother, for example, but, you know, they can both wind up crazy from it. There's almost something quite ludicrously pathetic about the stage mother. You think of a variety of that condition with JonBenet Ramsey, God rest her soul, the little child wound up, you know, strangled to death in the basement. That was they made her into a monkey with the dresses and then. But I'm talking about something other than a beautiful child. I'm talking about a child who has more than surface beauty. And I'm not underestimating the value of surface beauty. I'm a man who loves beauty in all forms, whether it be a bird or be a human. But I'm talking about a gifted child. I'm talking about physicist Isaac Newton. I'm talking about double Nobel Prize winner Marie Curie. I'm talking about composer Felix Mendelssohn. I'm talking about a violin genius and conductor Yehudi Menuhin. But what about child prodigies whose stars crash like an asteroid? Do we know about them? And of course, not all geniuses start out at an early age with the word prodigy. Charles Darwin and Albert Einstein became brilliant scientists, but early on in their lives, they were considered stupid. Particularly Einstein, they used to box his ears. He was dumb. He was staring off into space because his mind was out there in the perimeters of the universe, somewhere the teacher couldn't go, okay? So here we are. 10-year-old girl sings at the Mar-a-Lago, and I figured, all right, you know, she's just going to be a kid singer, and I'm going to be polite. And I had to stand up. I was awed by her. And when she hit those high notes, I'm repeating myself now, I didn't have a dry eye. There wasn't a dry eye in the audience amongst the men. Now, the trophy wives don't move. Nothing moves them. It was filled with bald guys who made their fortune either in the garment center or in real estate. With the third wives, the second wife, they probably called the plaintiff. The plaintiff wives were not there already. They were up to the trophy wives, a minimum 3 decades or younger than them. And the wives were, when this 10-year-old girl came out, there wasn't a, the grown women were probably so jealous just by how she looked. You know, in our society, the younger, I know, really, the women got rigid and uptight. Because no matter how beautiful you are at 35 or 40, how can you compete? I'm just a social observer, pardon me. So I observed that the men were moved by the child, that the women were rigid with envy. Then I started to think about prodigies who've gone off the rails. And that's what we're talking about, the two sides of genius. Because there's not only one side to genius, there are two sides. And we live in a society that emphasizes the loser. The loser is held up as the role model, and I don't have to repeat myself again. And there's almost no money for the genius child. When I was a kid, and I got to remind you of this, there were varieties of high school programs. There was the academic track at Jamaica High School, the commercial track for those who wanted to go into like business or accounting or whatever. And then there was the trade school where the kids learned to do something. They didn't like math and all that. So they had a whole school for kids who learned how to be carpenters and plumbers and electricians. And God, did we need them. Take a look now. Where are the carpenters and plumbers and electricians coming from? Mexico. And God bless them. Most of the mechanics who know how to fix a car today come from Mexico, where they still have trade schools. But aside from that, aside from the three tracks in high schools, we had another track. The troublemaking bum, the kid who punched a teacher, the kid who wouldn't sit still in school. In other words, that bum from Arizona who wouldn't shut his mouth. He would have been thrown out of school. Some of them were very tough, and they liked to get physical. So they usually brought in teachers who was around. Usually the kids listened. And if the kid didn't listen, they put him into a reform school. And if they didn't listen, then they became a politician, if they wouldn't listen to anybody. Then they went right into politics directly. So you get the picture.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
We are talking about a hidden topic in America, a topic rarely discussed in the new America where the loser, the drug addict, and the bum, not to mention the illegal alien, is glorified as the new man. Come on, play it up. 10-year-old child, Jackie Evancho. I couldn't believe this voice. O'Neill Babino Caro, and I'm standing there saying, I've just seen a force of nature, and people didn't know what I was talking about. I said, she's a force of nature. She's a prodigy. And with proper handling, she's going to be one of the great divas. And I hope it's true. But on top of that, on top of what I've just described to you of the school system itself, I want to tell you something else. I was telling people about the kind of teachers I had as a kid. It's a little off the track, but it'll come back to where I was going anyway. And I'll take your calls on, were you a prodigy? What happened? Or did you know a prodigy? What happened? Blah, blah, blah. I had a teacher in high school who I told a lot of people about over the weekend because I don't know, we were talking about this and that. I said I had a teacher in high school who was missing 3 fingers on his right hand, his chalk hand. He was Irish. Allegedly, it was from a little experience with bombs in Ireland. And we loved this guy. We loved him. He was up at the blackboard with the 2 fingers with the chalk. And when the tests came back, Mr. W would call you out with your test grade. He'd go like this. Martin Shapiro, 99, come up to the board. And he'd give you the 99. He'd say, good job. Then he'd go down the line. Milton Feldman, 98, come up to the board. Gloria Allred, 0. No, Gloria Bernstein, 97, come up to the board. Now, I'm sitting there because I wasn't a particularly good geometry student. I know I had like a 78 or whatever. And I was dreading when he was run down the list. You talk about a Chinese mother. I'm not Chinese, but I may as well have been Chinese by the way I was raised to perform. So when he got under the 80s already, you were turning pink because you knew it was coming. So you get up to you got a 75 or whatever. All right. Milton Primer, come up to the board. And Primer would come up and he'd look at you in front of the whole class and he would insult you. He wouldn't call you a name. He'd say, now what happened to you? How come you only got a 74? And the kid would be red-faced, humiliated, right? And his poor self-esteem would suffer, wouldn't it? Well, guess what, you morons? It was the suffering of his self-esteem that made him go home and study more instead of telling him he was doing a good job for getting a 40. That's what they have today. You go to a Little League game, you see a kid miss a ball, and the father, good job, good job. I can't even go to the games. They miss the ball. They're klutzes. They shouldn't even have a uniform on. And he's screaming, good job, Johnny. What, everyone has to be a ball player? I don't understand the country's upside down from the way I was raised. So when I see a prodigy like this, I get excited. That's all I can say to you. So I'm asking you a question out about the prodigies. Were you a prodigy, blah, blah, blah? What happened to you? Because people do go off the rails. I think this is an interesting show. And I want to know why in this society. Oh, I was getting to another point. So let me just finish it. So in my time in school, there were different grades of kids. In other words, mentally, IQs. They gave you IQ tests, right? My IQ was 170. It was an off-the-charts IQ, but I was a terrible student because I couldn't memorize. I didn't like memorizing. But I could figure things out if they left me alone. It was only later on in graduate school when I had a great professor who said to me, I'm not going to require you to spit back what's in a book. He said, all I need you to know is where to look for the information. That's what he said to me. See, he understood what an intelligent mind needed. An intelligent mind didn't need facts sitting in his head. There were a lot of kids, mind you, who could memorize this and memorize that. And they usually became, in some cases, the doctors or the lawyers. I'm not trying to mock that. We certainly have some great doctors and lawyers who are both brilliant and great memorizers. But unfortunately, a lot of kids were simply great memorizers, and they became automatons in their fields. Anyway, there was a thing in my school in those days, a whole program called SP, Special Progress. What is that? What does that mean? If you were considered bright, they would let you skip the eighth grade, and you went to a special school, an SP class, where you skipped the eighth grade, and you did seventh and ninth in a junior high, and then you went into high school. Now, here's something interesting for you to know. I went into school to begin with when I was five because of my birthday. It had nothing to do with intelligence, just the luck of the birthday, right? And I was not a tall kid. So right away, I was 5 years old and on the smaller side in a very mean, tough, horrible neighborhood. Now I get through the get the SP, and the teacher says to my mother, she says, Mrs. Savage, before you decide whether or not Michael should go into the SP class, I want you to think through this carefully. Because if he does, he's going to enter high school as a sophomore, and he's only going to be 13 years old, and he's going to be a kid amongst some kids who are 18 years old. And he may not be able to emotionally handle the results. We didn't even pay any attention to that. We just did it because it was considered a big deal. But you know something? Looking back, I wish I didn't skip the eighth grade. But the point is, in other words, there's a lot to be said for not skipping grades if you're pretty bright or you're a good test taker. Because there's an emotional development in a child as well as an intellectual development. That's a separate story unto itself. I just wanted to share it with you. And one last detail on all of this. I look at school budgets today. Do you know how much money goes for English as a second language? How many billions are being wasted on illegal immigrants who can't speak English, and we have to have the whole class slowed down, the whole curriculum slowed down for them? I never heard of a country that's so upside down. You want me to renovate things? I can renovate them. I have so many great ideas. That's why you buy my books. You want to renovate the school system, save billions of dollars? Real easy. Eliminate English as a second language. If the kid wants to learn English, let him learn English. My father came over as an immigrant from Russia. They didn't have Russian as a second language. Either he learned English in 2 minutes, or they would have pushed him to the back of the class as a dummy. So he didn't want to be a dummy, so he learned English. And the mother said, speak English or you'll never amount to anything in the world. That's the way it was. Learn English, learn English, learn English. No, no. And have to give you a tutor in your bedroom at night. The whole world is upside down, which is why China's coming here and laughing at us. Why the currency is debased. Why the manufacturing, they can't even add 13 and 43. Jeff in New York on WOR, thanks for listening. You're on the show. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, a pleasure. My wife actually is from Chile, from South America, and she is actually very similar to this young girl. She actually was a child in opera, actually a very big prodigy.
Right.
As a kid. She actually, as a young kid, she actually got scholarships right from the get-go.
Right.
When she was 14, actually, Plácido Domingo actually went to South America for a competition.
And what happened? Did she thrive, or did it come to an end?
No, she thrived. She, actually, if you care to hear, my mother-in-law actually grabbed my wife's hand as a kid at 14, back behind the stage, and right before Plácido Domingo was ready to walk out the door, asked if she could do an audition right on the spot.
The stage mother gave her the start because she asked him, and he said yes.
He said, well, go ahead and sing. Right there on the spot, she belted out an area. He gave her a scholarship right on the spot. At 15, not even a year later, she spent the next 5 years in Europe singing with a full scholarship all over Europe. At 17, she was singing professionally, and they just crushed her. They abused the voice. She was making a ton of money. And at that point, she just couldn't take it. She quit, went back to her, you know, back to Chile. 4 years later.
She left you?
No. I'm sorry?
She left you alone here?
No. I'm married to her now. We've been
together. Oh, well, that's a great story, Jeff. Thank you for that. Well, it's like a racehorse. Is there anything more sad that breaks a person's heart more than to see an incredibly beautiful, gorgeous thoroughbred break a leg on a track, and then they have to shoot it or euthanize it? Does that not rip your guts out? And you ask yourself, why does such an amazing animal break a leg? The answer is simple. They breed the horses for speed without regard to the weight that the animal is bearing on his feet, and the bones break. You ask any trainer, they're pushing the horses beyond their capacity, and the horse breaks a leg. In plain English, the horses were not made to be bred like this and to run like that. In other words, they're pushing them too hard, which is an interesting side note for children. You could have a thoroughbred child, and I must disagree with that Chinese lady who says, you know, do this, insult them. You could push them a little too hard, too, and you could break them. Never mind a leg. You break a heart, you can't heal it. I remember when I was a kid in New York. Oh, I used to go from one street to the next, from the Bowery to Harlem. I don't think there's a street in Manhattan I didn't walk in when I was a kid. I was an inveterate Manhattan walker. I remember there was a shop on 86th Street, a little tiny store. That's the part of New York I used to love, the older New York. I don't even know if it exists anymore. You'd see little stores in Germantown. That's all gone already. It's yuppified, whatever. And the store said it was, we fix everything but broken hearts, okay? I never forgot that. It was beautiful. But you can break a prodigy's heart, too. You could push the child too far, and you could break the child. Or you could yell at the child too much and break the child. You could drive the child crazy and drive the child into drugs. So this is the challenge for a society and for the individual parent. How do you raise a child to begin with? That's number one. But the biggest challenge is how do you raise a really special child who's a genius? We have all sorts of programs for children who are... you can't use the word anymore. I'll use a word, special education. All right, we have to have sympathy for them. I had a brother who was handicapped. I only wish to God that they had then what they have now. I don't think he would have been sent away to a home because I pretty much know that they could have brought this kid back to some functional level. In those days, they threw him on the trash heap of life, and for 20 years he suffered in a mental hospital until he died there. I don't even want to go into it. The horrors are beyond belief. It's one of the reasons I keep working. I've told you this before. What motivates me? I have two hearts and two minds beating in my body. One is for me and one is for my brother who never lived, Jerome. So I do it for him in a way. Like I have to lead his life as well. And so you say, well, it's just a metaphor. Take it any way you want. You know what I'm saying? I do have to lead that double life. I have to have one life for me and one life for the boy who never came out, the silent brother. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of subtleties in genius, and there's a lot of subtleties in kids who are unfortunately born with a chemical deficiency or enzymatic deficiency or genetic deficiency or physical handicaps. Yes, of course we need to help them. But when a society only helps them, what happens to the geniuses is the question.
Savage.
Play Dungaree. No, I hate that song. I need something more current, something like from 1959. Can you move it up a little from 55 to 59? No, I'm joking. I should stop playing 50s rock and roll. I really should. It kind of dates me. I think I should play 60s rock and roll. So let's play some of the hippie songs of the 60s from the protest years to go along with the Woodstock vermin in the gutters, who are pretending that they're real cool, you know.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Said a joker to the thief.
Hey, Jimmy.
There's too much confusion.
Yeah.
I can't get no relief.
Yeah.
How many roads
my friend is blowing in the wind.
You've been blowing in the wind all your life, Bobby. I turn him off. I can't stand any of the con man. He's been blowing in the wind since 1968. Oh, God. You look back and you ask yourself, how in the world can this country survive after Kunstler, Ginsburg, and Timothy Leary, the country was ruined. Three men destroyed America. I try to analyze which three men destroyed America. And the best I could figure out was Kunstler and the law, who destroyed the law, and all respect for humanity. William Kunstler, who rode the freedom buses down to the South, but did it just for the nookie. Alan Ginsberg, a communist who posed as a prophet and destroyed the minds of many Jewish men. And then Timothy Leary, the fake prophet who popularized the use of the mind-killing LSD. I'd say those three men destroyed America. It's surprising. Now, if you want to add a fourth to it, it would be Bella Abzug, one of the early leaders of the women's movement, even though she wasn't really the progenitor of the women's movement. I'd have to throw her in for good measure. I would say those four together destroyed America. That's why I tell you, I can see what these people are doing, and it bothers me to see them getting away with it because of guys like Anderson Cooper and people with dirty skirts like Andrea Mitchell. Talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows. Talk Radio Network, an independent syndicator. I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in a ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends and a lot of unhappy people, too. I wouldn't use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.
So it came out through leaked cables that your panderer-in-chief tried to apologize to Japan for the World War II and the end of World War II using nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, of course, these were terrible, terrible weapons of mass destruction. Japan and the Nazi state of nation of Germany were racing to develop nuclear weapons, and had they got them first, they would have dropped them on New York, Washington. And, of course, you wouldn't be here. So what was done by men who had to do it. And the president nevertheless tried to apologize for the winning World War II. The Japanese said no, for whatever the reason. They said, do not do it. They said, this is a non-starter. The cable came back and it said, Japan's vice foreign minister, whatever, told U.S. Ambassador John Roos at the time that the idea of President Obama visiting Hiroshima to apologize for the atomic bombing during World War II was a non-starter. Now, whatever their reasons, whatever their motive, and it may have been the fear that Americans would get so angry at the president they would stop buying Japanese products, or that anti-nuclear groups in Japan would attack their own military, or those opposing the defensive alliance between the Japan and the U.S. Would be emboldened. Whatever Tokyo's motive, Obama's motive was once again to apologize for America defending freedom. This time for winning with devastating finality the war Japan started. This is an amazing presidency. It's astounding to me how brainwashed most people really are in this country. But stop and think for a moment. If your grandfather or father served or was of age in 1945, he would probably have been part of the invasion force of the Japanese mainland. The chances are he would have died. You, your brothers, your sisters would have never been born. Same with your children and your grandchildren. And everybody knows this. They knew from the experiences on Iwo Jima and on the other islands that the Japanese soldiers would rather commit suicide rather than surrender. Moreover, every Japanese citizen was being trained to become a human bomb. I had this on my show 15 years ago when I was a local host in San Francisco, and a Japanese American called the show and said, you're 100% right. He said, my grandmother was being trained to make a bayonet out of a bamboo stake to kill an American. Every Japanese civilian was being trained to kill Americans. Do you know how many men would have been lost? Germany and Japan were seeking nukes, but time ran out. And you've, of course, forgotten Nanking, the rape of Nanking by Japanese soldiers. You forgot the Bataan Death March. The fact of the matter is, we should respect human life. We should respect the tragedies of innocent civilians being killed. But the fact of the matter is, it was them or us. Luckily, it was them, not us. Just to give you a little history.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
You know, if you give guns to a criminal and the criminal uses the gun in a crime, you go to jail. But what if the Justice Department gave 2,000 guns to Mexican criminals and they were used in crimes killing God knows how many in Mexico, and at least one American Border Patrol agent, no one's guilty? How is that possible? Answer, the government is above the law. Now, it's not supposed to be that way. You understand that. You do understand that no one should be above the law in a democracy, but when you descend to a banana republic, which we have rapidly descended into under this administration, the government is above the law. So that's why I'm not going to talk about it. You understand that? Instead, I'm going to read a sex scene from Abuse of Power. And I'm going to leave out some of the lines. I'm going to airbrush some of the lines, which you'll have to read yourself in the book. Not that there's no F words. I just know it's a family show. But if you're ashamed of your body and if you're ashamed of lovemaking, then, turn the show off for a minute or two. Because I want to show you something, that this is not a wooden book. This is literature. Okay? Exhausted as he was, Jack couldn't sleep. It was nice to be on a mattress again and have the warmth of a working radiator, but he spent the next 2 hours unable to stop thinking. And he starts thinking about what happened to him and, you know, how he just escaped something terrible. And he looked at his watch again because, remember, he has a mild case of Asperger's, and he looks at clocks and watches to calm him down. That watch had brought him comfort so many times over the years, a sense of calm. There was nothing that could ever replace it, and he cursed Blank for using him, for knowing instinctively that Jack would never leave something so valuable behind and using that knowledge against them, against all of them. Jack remembered the violence and death that had descended on that apartment house, and he remembers who died, right? Finally, Jack says to himself, stop it. You're going to save lives. It was a tragic corruption of his comment about preferring the death of 100 million Muslims to 100 million non-Muslims. The lives of dozens of people had to be surrendered in the hope of sparing millions more. That was the math of modern-day anti-terror activities. It was only a waste if he failed. That kept returning him to the biggest thought of all, and that was what was going to happen. He was starting to drift off when he heard the faint sound of a toilet down the hall. A moment later, a silhouette appeared in the bedroom doorway, barely visible in the light from the window. You left me alone, she said softly. You looked peaceful. I didn't want to disturb you. Well, probably happy to be rid of me for a while. Never, he told her. She came into the room. I said some terrible things to you last night. Sometimes I speak without thinking. You've already apologized for that, even though you didn't need to. You had a right to be upset. We both did. Nobody should ever have to see what we saw. She closed the door behind her now, then moved to a small television in the corner and turned it on, turning it to an Arab station, which was playing only Arabic music at the moment. Jack wasn't sure what she was up to, but he didn't protest when she came over to the bed and lit the scented candle that was sitting on the nightstand. Her long brown hair was highlighted against the window, and he saw a light snow falling outside. He didn't know if he should trust this or her motives. It didn't matter. He instantly felt himself stirring. I don't want to be alone right now, she said, then reached a hand under the back of her T-shirt and unfastened her bra, dropping it to the floor. Her breasts shifted, reacting instantly to the brush of the fabric. He didn't look away this time. Neither do I. I want to forget you. I want to forget for a while, Jack. Can you help me do that? Well, you have no idea how much I'd like to try. He hadn't bothered to take off his clothes before lying on top of the bed, and she came to him, reaching for his belt and unbuckling it. I'll not read the next few lines because of the children and the super religious. Then she pulled away, whispering softly against his cheek, make me forget, Jack, please make me forget. As he drew her nearer and removed her T-shirt, she began to moan deeply and loudly, loudly and deeply. In the midst of their heat, such a state of abandon was reached that the normally voyeuristic Jack, who liked to watch himself make love, actually fell from the bed onto the hot radiator. But like the Indian fakirs, who can be on a bed of nails without later showing puncture marks, Jack did not scorch or burn, nothing visible remaining except a small soreness days later. I think I'll go to skip the next paragraph. Page 253, Abuse of Power. Her cries became veritable screams as she moaned, and her eyes became glassy with passion. As Jack continued to bring Sarah to an increasingly greater state of tension and release, her screaming became threatening. He tried to quiet her by putting his hand over her mouth while continuing blah, blah, blah. So let me finish it. It's two more paragraphs. So Jack is with this woman late in the book, and they're having, they're really together, okay? And Jack, who liked to watch himself make love, actually fell from the bed onto the hot radiator. But like the Indian fakirs who can be on a bed of nails without later showing puncture marks, Jack did not scorch or burn, nothing visible remaining except a small soreness days later. Let me pause there. Have you ever read anything like that in a novel? The answer is no. It's novel. It's original. It's not derivative. Nobody that I know of has ever written a sex scene like this. Ever. Are you ready? I'll finish. Her cries became veritable screams as she moaned and her eyes became glassy with passion. Her screaming eventually became very threatening. Jack tried to quiet her by putting his hand over her mouth while continuing to stroke with his loins and lips. Quiet, quiet, he tried to command hoarsely. Faisal will hear you. He reached for her T-shirt and couldn't believe himself as he pressed it over her mouth, holding it down hard against her lips by pressing it against the sheets, one hand on each side of her face. Their hips were in perfect synchrony, and she continued, her cries and screams now muffled beneath the shirt, as Jack made love to her as he had never made love before. Sarah bucked and arched and was in a world he could never see. Then it was over, and they collapsed onto the bed, sweating, chest heaving. Sarah rolled toward him and snaked a hand across his chest as she nuzzled his neck. Thank you, she murmured. You don't know how long I've been wanting to do that. She smiled, kissed his neck. It couldn't have been that long. We barely know each other. And I'll stop right there. Because my point is quite simple, which is this. Women only on the Savage Nation. Women only. Did you find this scene upsetting? Did you find it abusive, offensive? Should it not have been read on radio? Did you find the sex scene for Abuse of Power grating? Did you think it was inappropriate for me to read it on the air? After all, I am not a liberal. Now, from a liberal, you'd expect a sex scene, but of course it would be written by somebody with the inability to describe lovemaking. They would have to revert to the gutter. They'd have to use F words and dirty words and be like a dirty little boy, which is what you would expect from those on the other side of the aisle with a pen in hand, so to speak. But anyway, women only. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Albany, New York. John, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Mike, I just bought Abuse of Power, but I've been a longtime listener, so I bought five other books leading up to that because I'm fascinated on your development here, starting with Earth Medicine and herbs and then liberal.
Oh, my God. You bought a book I wrote in 1972, Earth Medicine.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
You know, I was writing books about the environment before Al Gore was a glint in his father's eye, I think.
I know, and it's interesting. I wanted to know which order I should read in, but I couldn't get through the other night.
Well, I wouldn't say that Earth Medicine leads to Abuse of Power, but it's an interesting theory.
what order would you read them in?
I would read my novel first because it's more exciting, and then I would read Trickle Up Poverty because it tells you exactly who is responsible for the meltdown on Wall Street and how they're getting away with it by obfuscating in order to make certain that Obama's not called out for who he is, which is, frankly, in my opinion, a front man for the people who busted the economy in 08.
Fascinating. Okay.
All right. I'll send you another copy of Abuse of Power, though, for being a good caller.
Savage.
What people don't understand, though, is why some elected officials in Washington don't seem to share the same sense of urgency that people all around the country are. I've told my administration to keep looking every single day for actions we can take without Congress, steps that can save consumers money, make government more efficient and responsive, and help heal the economy. And we're going to be announcing these executive actions on a regular basis. People out here don't have a lot of time or a lot of patience for some of that nonsense that's been going on in Washington.
Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. No women callers. You see that? I said women only. Did you find the scene upsetting? Not. I have 30 women callers. Out of the 8 million listeners I have 30, 35 women. You'd think one of them would have listened and called. I'm joking. Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation from Sacramento, California. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you've just sent your book to the top of the bestseller list, I'm sure, with you reading from it. That was a great scene. I would have never thought that was in your book.
What, did you find it offensive?
Not at all. No,
I shouldn't say why, but the answer is because it's not offensive to write about lovemaking if it's done with dignity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've tried to call you so many times to get through and tell you how important you are to me, and I've been a listener for a long time, and...
Are you a young lady who grew up listening to me with your parents, or are you older than that?
No. I started listening to you after 9/11 when I never turned my radio off. That's when I discovered you. And ever since I heard you then, every day I listen.
So you started listening when you were 75 years old. Now you're 85, huh?
No, I'm only 45.
I don't know how I do it. Each day is getting harder, I swear to you, Tony. The scandals from Holder and Obama are so frightening. And when I see their mouthpieces go on the cable channels, I want to start breaking things. I see that the guys like Neil Cavuto don't have the horsepower to challenge them. He sits there. I mean, he's a nice enough guy, but he's basically a stooge. And it's frightening to see them get away with their double talk and lies. I mean, they don't even say, how come the Solyndra CEO paid no taxes? How come the guys, you know, it's one after the other. It's unbelievable. How do they let him get away with it?
I don't know. How does anybody...
How come Fox News hasn't been screaming at the Democrat shills saying, wait a minute, Warren Buffett says the rich should pay more taxes, yet he may owe $1 billion in back taxes. It just came out. How in the world does your boss let him get away with that? Why don't they say that to them?
I don't know, but you've got to hang in there for us. You've got to keep coming on every day.
Well, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power in a plain brown wrapper so nobody in your apartment complex. 1-800-449. Liz in Pittsburgh, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I actually think that sex scene is kind of hot because, you know, girls, they, you know, they're a tease. And so that man seems kind of like forceful. And I think that's pretty much what women want in the bedroom.
Is to fall on a radiator. Well, he falls on the radiator. Have you ever read of any scene like this in a book? I didn't copy this from anybody. It shows you how vital my imagination is. Is that Jack falls off the bed onto the hot radiator. I mean, I thought that was pretty good, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to read it. I think it's pretty interesting how he takes the, you know, the T-shirt and kind of muscles it. It's kind of almost, you know, it's edgy. It's definitely edgy.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you got that. It is very edgy, and it's something that you would never expect from a guy like me. Isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely not from you.
You see, now this is the stereotype I'm trying to overcome, and that is that conservatives don't understand sensuality, conservatives don't understand sexuality, conservatives don't understand passion. That's nonsense, but that's how the libs sell themselves to the children. The children by nature want to have fun. They want freedom. And they figure that the quickest road to freedom is to become a liberal. That if they become a so-called conservative and love their country, they're not going to have any pleasure or fun. And we've got to change that, Liz. It's one of the reasons I wrote a novel. You know what I'm saying?
They have been pumping sex. I'm 33. They've been pumping us full of sex since I've been, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. That's all you see is sex everywhere. So why can't we be, you know, a little sexual too if we're a conservative? You know, I don't have rainbows on my car, and I'm not telling everybody what I do in the bedroom, but, you know, I like a good, you know, hot story to read, too.
Well, it's going to be sent to you if you stay on the air. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. You don't even have to buy it. Look, incidentally, guys, I got to tell you again, the book my publisher emailed me yesterday, it's doing extremely well for a first novel. Actually, it's doing very well even for a 10th novel. I beat some of the big names in the thriller category. With your help, because remember, it's not been on any other outlet. So thank you very much for that. But look, I'm not telling you to go buy the book because I need the money. I'm telling you to buy the book for A, it's a heck of a read, B, it is a political novel, and C, it sends a strong message to publishing and to Hollywood that, yes, we're conservatives, yes, we love America, and yes, we buy books, and yes, we go to movies. And having said that, take a look at the celebrities, so-called, the low-life celebrities who've joined the communists in the gutter. You take a phony like Alec Baldwin, one of the worst people on the planet. Here is a man who does TV ads for a bank saying that he's in favor of the Occupy Wall Street vermin. How does he get away with this? Answer, because they own the media. Now, I got to tell you something. I am boycotted by certain advertisers because they say I'm too extreme. What is extreme about me? I love America? Well, then I'm an extremist. What is extreme about me? I want illegal aliens stopped from swarming over the border? Well, then I'm an extremist. What, I believe in English only as the language for America, not ballots in 10 languages? Then I'm an extremist. I mean, what are you talking about? And yet you have rap people, drug addicts, degenerates, advertising banks, and they're considered kosher by the people who run the ad business? No, something's wrong with that picture. I have been subjected to this double standard for too long to not tell you about it. And I just told you about it. And I'm sick of it. And it's only going to change when you change. You've got to change your buying habits. You've got to support advertisers like those who advertise on this show. And you've got to start boycotting products that are advertised by double talkers like Alec Baldwin. How can he advertise a bank and then go in the street with the gutter rats and say, I'm for occupying Wall Street? You should cancel your credit cards if you want to put your money where your mouth is. So, you know, you have the power. You have the power. And you've got to use your power. There are far more of us than there are of them. Okay, never mind the 99%. You're the 99%. They're the 1% of straight garbage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Sacramento, Paula, I want to hear what you got to say.
I just want to say that I love that scene that you read, and I would love to meet Jack Hatfield to be my lover.
Now wait a minute, lady.
What?
Now wait a minute, lady. Does your husband know you made this call?
I'm divorced.
Now wait a minute. Who's laughing in the background with you?
That's me. I'm alone in my car waiting for my daughter to get out of school right now.
So you're allowed to call about the love scene before your daughter gets in the car?
Yeah, she'll be coming down the hill from her school like any minute now, so I'm sneaking this in.
So we better hurry up and finish this conversation quickly. Before your daughter busts you. So let me ask you something, Paula. Have you read Abuse of Power, or you heard me reading that scene on the air?
No, I heard you read it on the air. I'd love to get the book. I'm just, like, so broke right now because I'm unemployed.
Oh, okay. Well, you have an early Halloween gift on the way.
Oh,
coming out to you right now. And we will not give out your phone number on the air, because if people hear that you want to meet Jack Hatfield and I ever told them how to meet you, forget about it. You'd have 100,000 men beating a path to your door.
Fantastic.
Well, I know you live in Sacramento. I understand that. That's why your comment is so apt.
I actually live in Redding, California, and it's pretty the pickings are pretty slim up here, okay?
But isn't Redding, not to be, derogatory, but isn't Redding the home of the redneck?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I was a Bay Area transplant. I moved up here 10 years ago, and I'm still going through a little bit of culture shock.
Oh, so like when you go in and ask for a cappuccino, they look at you like you're weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, they just have coffee black. That's all.
Yeah, but quite frankly, I like my coffee black. I like my whiskey neat, so I'm in my
Wait a minute. So you belong in Redding?
I guess so, in kind of a weird way, yeah.
You see that? Look, keep on laughing, read Abuse of Power, and get back to me, and let me know what you think of it, okay?
I would love to. I'm looking forward
All right.
to it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's on the way out to you. You see that? Don't think. We now have 23 women listeners from around America on the Savage Nation. Although I'm the second most popular talk show host in the world, in America, which would make it the world, on the Internet. Did you know that? I got to clear the air on that for a minute. It came out 2 weeks ago that my show was the number two with a 10.6 share on streaming. In other words, where people listen to the show either on the Internet or on a cell phone, right? And that Rush is number one. Now, the people who don't like me, which is a big list of people, said, big deal. The reason Savage is number two is because he's not heard in so many cities, so people have to listen to him on the Internet. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like it's reasonable, but think about this for a moment. Rush is heard in every city in America. He's heard on every ABC station. He's heard nationally. He's number one. So how does it figure that I'm number two because I'm not heard? That doesn't make sense. That's rubbish. The reason I'm listened to on the web is twofold. One is because that's a much younger demographic. You got to understand that. Most older people listen to radio on the radio. They don't go to the web. They don't listen on cell phones. It's a younger person access point. The web. The web is used for radio by younger people. So I would say that I skew much younger than most old white guys in talk radio. And there's a reason for it, because they were looking for, I don't know what they're, I know what they're looking for. They wanted a father to tell them like it is. They wanted someone to speak sort of real to them instead of this double talk they had all their life, the Dr. Spock, everything's okay. It's not that their father was a bad guy. It's not that their teachers were bad. It's not that their priest was bad. It's not that their doctor was bad. It's that people either didn't know how or they were afraid to be as blunt as I am with regard to what's going on around them. And a lot of young people are bewildered by it all. I'm not really bewildered. I actually see things exactly as they are. I'm rarely wrong about international politics. I don't think I've ever been wrong internationally. I made a few bad calls nationally. I don't even remember them, one or two. In terms of my personal life, it's a mess. In terms of my personal life, it's like everyone else's. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that's the way it is. I mean, in real life, on an everyday life basis, I have the same problem as everybody else does because I'm just like you. I don't pretend to be otherwise. But in terms of having the analytical abilities that I have, nobody can match me in talk radio. Nobody. And there are phenomenal people writing articles, making commentary. They're awesome. But they can't do what I do, which is do this every day, day in and day out, 5 days a week for 18 years or 16 years or whatever it is. Okay? They can't do it. You try it. You try it for 3 hours one day. 1-800-449-8255. There are more stories coming up. And again, if you were offended by the sex scene between Jack, please don't call the show. Oh, there's one caller. Keep Richard on. He'd rather hear the Bible rather than Jack making love to somebody in the book. All right. Okay. But remember, Jack is single and Sarah was single. They're not cheating on anybody. Aren't they allowed to have a little fun? After all the death around them, they can't lay down with each other.
Savage.
Talk radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Talk Radio Network and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when? 2000? Now, we all hear that the Internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the Internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the Internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. What is this? Oh, here's a good call. Julie in Sacramento, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, so I'm having lunch today with my 70-year-old mom. Out of the blue, she says, "Hey, I know a book I really need for Christmas. Michael Savage's book, new book." And I couldn't tell her that I already listened to you and why she wants it. She was.
Oh, you mean she heard me read the sex scene between between Jack and the unknown woman, and then now she wants the book?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What's your pastor going to say when he hears about this?
Oh, I don't know. My priest, I have no idea.
He probably read it already himself.
Have I? No, I'm going to go get it.
No, I said your preacher's probably read the book already.
Oh, you think so?
I could guess. Somebody's buying it. I'm sending you a free copy for your mother. Don't read it yourself, though.
Okay.
Abuse of power goes out to you. No, it was a test I wanted to see. It was not. I didn't use one F word. There was no graphic description of bodily parts. I didn't get dirty. There's no pornography. It was straight out passionate lovemaking between my main character, Jack Hatfield, and a character. What's wrong with that? What? I don't understand it. In an age where sex scenes are so poorly written, where everybody has to revert to F words and dirty words, you know, and fake sex scenes. I mean, why do you have to write that garbage? Remember in the movies, they're always like a fan in the background and he's pushing the woman up against the wall with animal sounds. Like, I mean, that's not real. That's like something that somebody who never has sex writes a sex scene about, you know, with a fan blow. Remember in the 80s, every movie had a big fan going on in a loft. Somehow a loft made you sexy if you had a loft. And it was always against the wall with their people paying. Ah, come on. Why is there a wall? It's very uncomfortable leaning against the wall like that.
Savage.
I really enjoyed writing, because I don't want to talk about the protesters for another few. I can't take it anymore. I think that these hippie trust fund brats will be going home shortly, and mommy can give them a nice hot meal, and then, you know, they can go on to the next protest that they're told to go to by the unions that they don't work for. At least the union thugs get paid for it. These idiots don't even get paid for it. All right, let me take a call, a political call. Paul in Oregon. Jay, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Doctor. Appreciate it very much. I got to give you dual props. You were one of the first to talk about sneaking Iranian forces or stealth types in Mexico, and you'd been warning about that, and sure enough, there's stories on that.
Oh, you mean the Iranians who are shaving off their beards and looking like Mexicans, changing their names with fake IDs to come across the border? They don't even need IDs. With help from Eric Holder, they're ushered in with the help of the Border Patrol.
Well, my other comment, too, along those lines is with those weapons supposedly from Eric Holder's approval that went down to supposedly fight off the cartel, and I'm wondering how much longer do you think Eric Holder can stay in office at this point?
Oh, at least through several more administrations of Obama. I think Obama will be president for life, and Holder will be a very old man before they get him out of office, because since he is so corrupt, he's immune to any rule of law. See, you're asking a question that has a dual meaning to it. If we were living in a nation that was run by law-abiding citizens and a law-abiding administration, there's no question Holder would be indicted for what he's done with Fast and Furious, along with many other scandals, incidentally. But the fact of the matter is, these people are above the law, therefore the law cannot touch them. Does that answer your question?
It answers my question, and it just...
No, I'm trying to be sturdy about it. It's not easy. I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Read it before it's banned in Portland. Shall I read you from Abuse of Power? Yes. Page 275, dog show. So he goes to the dog show. Jack had been to the Cow Palace many times in his life. A large indoor arena. The palace had been lost over the years to the San Francisco Warriors, host over the years, the San Jose Sharks, numerous rock concerts, wrestling events, two Republican national conventions, and a number of livestock exhibitions, including the Horse and Stock Show and the Grand National Rodeo. I'm talking about the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And he remembers going there when he was a child to a watch and clock exhibition, right? So he's going to a dog show, and he is looking for the senator. And I actually went to this dog show last year while I was writing it, and this comes directly from my visit, okay? When they entered, Jack and Sarah were guided by an usher toward a section near the arena floor. On the floor itself, men in blazers and women in conservative suits led dogs on leashes around a cordoned-off area as the judges carefully eyeballed them and the audience applauded. This was an all-breed conformation show, and there were a variety of purebreds in competition, including poodles, Irish wolfhounds, Boykin spaniels, German wire-haired pointers, Great Danes, mastiffs, Rottweilers. From large to small, fluffy to nearly hairless, all magnificent in their own way, the best of the best on display. An Irish wolfhound caught Jack's attention, a breed he had always admired for its beauty and fearlessness. They were known to hunt wolves in packs. There were also Turkish sheepdogs. Their gigantic spiked iron anti-wolf collars displayed beside them as they got to their feet. These Anatolian shepherd dogs hid among the sheep, giving an attacking wolf a huge surprise when they bit into their iron collars. Jack had long been a dog lover, and seeing a gray poodle parade proudly across the floor made him instantly miss Eddie. But he knew the little guy was in good hands with Tony, and he'd be home soon enough to greet him. I'll pause right now. I'm reading from the greatest novel of its time. I would call it a political novel, but it's really a thriller, Abuse of Power. Because I could see how good this is as I read it now. It's actually so good that I'm enjoying reading it. And I got to tell you, this thing about the dog show is very good. I was there last January. I love the dog show. I had to leave early because the smell got to me. I couldn't take it.
Savage.
Wall Street protests no spontaneous uprising. It's directed by a leftist shadow organization. Read the rest of it yourself. Read it yourself. I'm not going to read you articles that excellent journalists have spent time and trouble to put together. Read it and you decide for yourself whether you think this is organic and young, the way Nancy Pelosi said it. It's organic and it's young. I wonder if Nancy Pelosi has any Jewish friends. What's that, guys? Where's that? In my house? Guys, did you hear it on the radio? Uh-oh. Well, I think somebody's abusing my power and just broke into my studio. Something has gone off in my radio studio, and I have nobody here because I work alone. Why don't you play some music? I'm going to go beat it up. Hold on a minute. Play some music.
Blue Monday. How are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
back. Michael's here alone.
You know, there are benefits to working alone in a radio station. You can focus. You don't have to perform for anybody, so you could think clearly. However, when a smoke alarm goes off and the workers are not available, I had to run down the hall and get a chair and climb up on a chair and pull the smoke alarm out of the ceiling. I mean, okay, that really just happened. A little live performance here for you on the Savage Nation. Nothing to worry about, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone, please return to your seats. Everything is fine. Okay, back to the website. That was quite a workout. A Wall Street protest, no spontaneous uprising. My novel is Abuse of Power. I really suggest you understand why it's a bestseller by reading it. Las Vegas, Larry, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage, afternoon. I just want to tell you, I believe my wife divorced me because I've listened to your show too much. Every time I listened to it after work, she'd rush over and turn that radio off and yell at me. I'd have to go in the garage and listen to your show.
Larry, let me ask you, did you have a good marriage prior to listening to my show?
No, when the radio was off, everything was fine.
No, but I mean prior to having found my show to listen to. In other words, was your marriage stable separate from the show, or was this an excuse?
Found your show almost the same time we got married, and back just a month before 9/11, and that just led to it. I think that was a part of the reason that she divorced me, because we couldn't agree on nothing. She told me I was a doomsday person listening to your show.
Oh, she didn't want to hear the bad news, in other words. She thinks I'm making it all up.
Oh, she thought you were crazy.
Yeah, I'm crazy. That's right. I'm crazy.
You thought I was crazy, right. And I can't find
That's
your book
right.
anywhere in the local supermarkets when I shop, even though they have
Well, it's in Barnes & Noble, Target, and all the bookstores in Las Vegas. But I would send you two copies, but you're only one now, Larry, so I'm going to send you one copy of Abuse of Power. Would you say it's worth worth it to you, Larry? Are you still on, Larry?
Yes, sir.
Larry, well, is it worth losing your wife over me?
Yes, sir. I'm much happier now. I listen to your show without any interruptions.
Well, what did she object to? She just didn't like what I was saying or how I said it, or both?
She would just flat out rush over and turn the radio off in anger. She would get angry.
Mm. But she wouldn't discuss any of the statements with you.
She wouldn't want to discuss anything with me. I would say...
Well, what about separate... Okay, let's be real about it. Aside from political commentary I would make, forget me, would she have discussions with you about anything?
No, we had pretty poor communication, to be honest.
All right, so she was basically a terroristic wife.
I agree.
And she was using me as an excuse to beat you up.
Oh,
the one thing that excited your mind, she hated the most because she couldn't reach you the way I did.
That's right, and I listened to you... I go nuts if my radio's off. I have to turn it on every time. I have to listen to you every single day or I go crazy. I mean, you're like an uncle and a father that never spoke to me.
Well, Larry, I would laugh if I said I didn't hear this many times. I have a unique role in America, and I really have to tell you, I know how attached the audience is to me, and how you have to understand it's a two-way street, though, Larry. I'm very attached to my audience. So it's not like I'm sitting here like some demigod throwing down lightning bolts. I'm communicating with my audience of like-minded individuals. The big problem for America today is that there's very little emotion and passion coming from the candidates themselves. Look at the Republican field. Is there anyone who reaches you the way I do? No. No. They're not talking to you. They're talking at you. They're giving you homilies. They're giving you garbage. You know that they're not going to do anything that they say they're going to do. They're going to do what their backers tell them to do. We all know that the fix is in. And that's why we're not too excited by this election. It's also why Kane is rising in the polls, because at least he speaks from the heart. At least he did. He's starting to change as well. I'm afraid he's going to go by the way of Bachman, incidentally. He's going to be another flash in the pan because he's being advised by the same dunces. That's a whole separate show, Larry. Larry, let me send you Abuse of Power.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
One, two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, home. We'll have some fun.
Well, I don't know if we can export Jerry Lee Lewis to China, but I'm sure that Jeff Immelt is working on it. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Beware the government media complex. Now, Eisenhower, of course, was the inspiration for that when he said, beware the military-industrial complex back in the early 50s. I, Michael Savage, gave a speech before the Commonwealth Club that is little known in the world. In the year 2000, that was entitled Beware the Government Media Complex. Little did I know that a day like today would arrive on my doorstep. Back in 2000, when I said Beware the Government Media Complex, I already saw a too cozy relationship between the Democrats and the media, but little did I realize it would reach the crescendo that we have now seen. And what am I talking about when I say the crescendo? Well, you don't have to be a genius to understand what I'm talking about. And that is China slash Obama slash GE slash NBC slash Comcast slash Jeff Immelt. Now, what do I mean by all of that? Well, it's a long story, but very easy to understand. General Electric is a magnificent corporation. It's a magnificent international corporation. General Electric is one of America's finest corporations. General Electric has some of the world's most advanced technology and one of the finest infrastructures of any corporation. And that is good for us. And yet, we saw the announcement on CNBC, the glowing announcements on CNBC, said that there's a green energy deal that was struck between GE and China. All they said was clean energy. Clean energy. But I looked a little more carefully. There was a lot more than clean energy. There's aviation and rail transportation. There's a transfer of technology in avionics. Avionics transfers, supposedly for the Chinese to build their first homegrown big passenger jet. I don't believe a word of it. We know the Chinese are going to use it to develop a homegrown big intercontinental bomber. This is the Loral Space and Technology scam all over again. So you see the CNBC, which is owned by NBC, which is owned by General Electric, which is run by Immelt, reports only what they want you, the idiot, to think they're doing. So they say General Electric agreed to clean energy transfers and work and whatnot with China. Well, that's true, but that's only one part of what they're doing. They're also transferring avionics technology to China, supposedly to help our friends in China develop their first homegrown big passenger jet. And we realize that the joint venture will result in $300 million in exports from Michigan, Florida, and Ohio, and support at least 300 high-tech jobs, it says, in the United States and China. That's according to the GE press release. Really, that's very interesting. Well, let's look into this in a little more detail later on. I think you're getting the drift of what I'm talking about. Beware the government media complex. The Obama administration approves the merger of Comcast and NBC. Chinese dictator arrives and he is feted in the White House by a president who says that he simply has a different economic system than we do. That would be like saying Hitler had a different view of the Jews than the other people in the world did at the time. It's not an understatement. It's a reality of what I'm saying to you. China is a dictatorship. There is no freedom of the press, no freedom of speech, and no voting. Do you understand that? If it doesn't matter to you, then there's no reason for you to listen to the show. Why listen to my show if you don't believe in freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and the vote? If you'd rather see the vote disappear and press controlled by the government and the books controlled by the government and the newspapers controlled by the government, then turn the show off. because you're not going to like a word that I say on the Savage Nation today, tomorrow, or tomorrow, or tomorrow, or tomorrow. All I can say to you is this. We learned that on top of all of this, who's appointed to be in the Economic Council of Advisors? None other than the former head or the current head or the last head or tomorrow's head of General Electric, Jeff Immelt. He's now in the White House. So you say, well, why would a guy want to give up a job at GE to go to work in the White House? It's very easy, schmuck. It's the same reason that the gentleman who ran the Treasury Department for George Bush left the job at Goldman Sachs to run the Treasury Department. Schmuck, you can't put two and two together? He did it for the salary, right? He took a cut in pay that was about 1,000-fold less per day. Maybe 100,000-fold per year less. Maybe 1,000,000 less fold. I don't know how much he makes. Why would Paulson have taken a job, leave Goldman Sachs, and go to work to run the Treasury Department? A, so he can put his competitors out of business, which he did. He put his competitors out of business. B, to advance his friends, which he did. And C, to get away with it and disappear into the woodwork after Bush went to sleep and did a book tour. Same thing with Immelt. Why would Immelt take a job running some Council of Economic Advisors for Obama? It's very simple. Because now when General Electric wants to transfer technology to China, it has to go to Jeffrey Immelt, who's now in the government, who says, yes, rubber stamp, send it over there. Supercomputers, no problem. Avionics, no problem. Any technology we have that we developed here in the United States of America, either with or for the military, you want to sell it to China? Well, it has to go through the government. Who's the government? Me. Jeff Immelt. I worked for GE yesterday. Today I work for the government. Beware the government media complex. Michael Savage, the year 2000.
Savage.
President of GE, now a government employee, Jeffrey Immelt, speaking at a GE turbine plant in Schenectady, New York. They make fabulous engines. I was on a plane coming back from Florida the other day. It was an old Challenger 601, and the pilot said to me, these engines are GE engines, and it's the same engines that are used, he said, on the Skyhawk. He said, these engines are fundamentally bulletproof. There's been millions of hours, he said, of use of these engines in the military. They're fabulous engines, and we love them. And I said, that is so good to know. I said, Skyhawk engines, military technology, now used on jets in America, et cetera. And I say, well, really, when will China be getting the technology on our latest supercomputers and our latest turbine technology? And little do I know, I pick up the news, and I see that in addition to the clean energy that the girls on CNBC reported, Mr. Immelt announced a joint venture between GE Aviation and Aviation Industry Corporation of China to develop and market the new generation of avionics systems with an immediate priority on supporting development of China's first homegrown big passenger jet. Didn't I tell you they don't just buy products, they make you give them the technology in order for them to buy that plane or whatever it is you're selling them. You got to give them the blueprints. It's all over. It gets the Loral deal all over again. A letter of intent signed by GE Transportation with the Ministry of Railways China to provide $350 million worth of U.S.-built locomotives, locomotive sub-assembly kits, service support, and signaling systems for China's railway upgrade. Well, you say, what's wrong with selling them trains? Well, right now, nothing. But I remember in the 1930s, I read that the Ford Motor Company sold truck factories to Hitler. And there was a big outcry against it. There still is some memory of this amongst liberals who have never forgiven the U.S. government for selling such technology to Germany. But you don't hear one word from the liberals today about selling the technology to a dictatorship in China. So, ladies and gentlemen, there are so many problems right now, it's hard to know if we could ever solve them. And the reason is because there's been a meltdown of honor and loyalty and patriotism at the highest levels of the corporate world. I don't know how else to put it. I really don't know how else to put it. There seems to be no honor amongst thieves. And there seems to be little loyalty amongst corporate presidents or CEOs. And the revolving door between major corporations and the U.S. government is extremely dangerous, as you can see by the meltdown of our economy brought about by some shady characters who I named in Trickle Up Poverty, some of whom worked for the government, who prior to their work for Bush had worked for some of the major investment banks. And it's unbelievable to me that there's been no investigation of the former Treasury Secretary. Just as I think there should be a congressional hearing right now on Immelt being appointed to the Council on Economic Advisers. It stinks. The Obama administration approves the merger of Comcast NBC. Who arrives from China? We hear Immelt's going into the government. And tomorrow we'll read that GE is allowed to sell advanced technology to China because he approved it. Where's the government? Where's the oversight?
Savage.
Can you explain to the American people how the United States can be so allied with a country that is known for treating its people so poorly, for using censorship and force to repress its people? Do you have any confidence that as a result of this visit that will change?
China has a different political system than we do.
China has a different political system than we do. That's his answer. President Roosevelt, how can you do business with Germany when Jews and dissidents are being put into gas chambers? Answer, Germany has a different political system than we do. Next question. Did you hear the answer to that question? Do you understand that we have a president who is in a class by himself? Let's put it to you that way. Now, let me start at the top. I'm not xenophobic. But on the other hand, this rush to be so xenophilic, which we hear coming out of the White House, the business community, and the media, is quite frightening. Many of us don't feel that being so xenophilic is the appropriate response to a China that is not only eating us alive economically because of the quislings within our own government and business community, because I have called for tariffs on Chinese goods of 20% in trickle-up poverty. Donald Trump, who is allegedly a very wealthy man and wealthier than I am, says that I'm absolutely right. He says 20% is the right number. Now, for those of you who are ignorant of business, and many of you don't even understand how business works, but you have opinions on it, and that's good because all people are entitled to their opinion, let me give you some facts. If you are an American manufacturer of candy and you want to ship candy to Mexico, you don't know it, but you have to transship your goods when they arrive in Mexico to pallets that are provided by Mexico, which is a form of a tariff. You're then paying hidden tariffs in other in other ways as well, such as having to use Mexican trucks, which are much more expensive than U.S. trucks. So we're paying tariffs as U.S. manufacturers everywhere in the world, and yet we're not charging tariffs because we have quisling, liar traitors in the government and in the business community who lie to you with the big lie about free trade. It's not free trade. This is not free trade. They have free trade. We don't have free trade, which is why we have unemployment, massive social unrest, and why we're dying as a nation. And unless we vote the bums out, we're finished as a nation. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. Unless there is a massive change in the thinking within the government, within the business community, but primarily within the minds of the people, we are finished as a nation. You just follow the trajectory of what we are doing in this country now with regard to China, with regard to every other nation on this earth, and we don't exist within a certain period of time. Well, I don't mean we go off the map. Portugal still exists. I have to play for you again a few sound bites. Let's listen to clip 5 now of Mr. Obama.
We want to sell you all kinds of stuff. We want to sell you planes. We want to sell you cars. We want to sell you software. And as President Hu and his government refocuses the economy on expanding domestic demand, that offers opportunities for U.S. businesses, which ultimately translates into U.S. jobs.
Well, unfortunately, he's wrong, whether he knows so or not, and I believe he does know better. He's the president of the United States. He's the most powerful man in the world. And he knows that if we sell them an airplane, they don't just buy the airplane. They want the technology to build their own version of that airplane. China is a copycat nation. They don't just get the airplane, they get the blueprints. They get the metallurgy. They get the electronic technology. But you wouldn't know that from the president, would you? I can give you example after example. We read that there's a nuclear cooperation agreement emerging between Obama and WHO that they worked out at a private dinner, and we don't know whether they ate carrot sticks and ice cream or something else. But we do know this. They worked out, they said, a sharing of nuclear technology. What does that mean? Does anyone know what that means? Does that mean that Obama just gave away the last vestiges of support that we have for our own self-defense?
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Talk radio is not a dying medium. It is stronger than ever. It is stronger than it's ever been before. Our job is to be watchdogs, not to be lapdogs. And I want to thank you for giving me total and absolute freedom to do so. That's the point I'm trying to make. I wouldn't have lasted a week with another syndicator. I could never have sat down after a show and been deconstructed where they say, well, you said this, tomorrow don't say that. That's would have been the end of it for me. I've had total freedom. I need total freedom to function. I know the American people, who, particularly the millions and millions of people who listen to this show, are going to breathe a sigh of relief that we have this year to look forward to together. It's had its ups and downs. But right now, we have seen the talk radio and the Savage Nation are responsible for the mighty blow that is being struck against socialism in America. And I believe this will grow when it forces the Democrats off the political landscape for having introduced Democrat socialism and worse to the United States of America.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I'm going to take a caller right now from Kansas. Mark, you're on the one and only Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it is a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been listening for a long time. I wanted to say I'm just amazed in this day and age, in 2011, with someone as learned as yourself, who just is one of the smartest people I listen to, can even believe in a God. Today, I mean, it shocks me actually that
I like that. I like shocking you. Do you find it offensive that a man of intelligence would believe in God?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's absolutely never been any proof of it. And in fact, if you're Catholic or someone who believes in the Bible, it was admittedly written by man. I mean, at least Muslims and other religions, try to act like it was that their word was written by God. But I mean, even if you're, I was raised.
Okay, I've heard you discuss. I don't reject what you have to say, nor am I going to here to try to turn you into a religious person. But let me ask you something: do you believe Albert Einstein was super intelligent?
Of course.
Okay. Are you aware that Albert Einstein was a great believer in God?
Yes, I am.
Okay. No, I don't know, because a lot of atheists are confused because of the college posters of Einstein with the hair and with the tongue out that they put on campuses in order to debase his image. He said the more he studied the perimeters of the universe, the more he came to believe there had to be a God.
Right. But I also believe that religion is something that can shape you throughout your entire life. Things that he had gone through had, for some reason, he had questions that could not be answered. And so he turned to religion, much like yourself. You had said that, you had discovered him when you had hit the bottom. I think that, like some people out there, I hate to bring up his name, but like Jesse Ventura or even like George Carlin used to say about God, that really it's something that if you have this hole in what you think is life and you have no answers for that, you have to go to this, you know, invisible man that is supposedly up there watching everything we do and all the evil that...
No, I've heard the atheistic arguments, and it's all, you know, it's sort of hollow, the whole thing, because have you not had black moments in your life where there was nowhere to go? Who do you turn to? What do you turn to?
With religion, you're told that God only helps...
No, but I'm asking you as a believing atheist. You believe in the religion of atheism, which is believing in nothing and nothingness, but you actually believe in something, which is nothingness, when you think about it.
I more believe in people or something physical than something that...
But have you ever fallen down a ravine and broken your leg and been laying there with no one to rescue you? Who would you call?
There's no one to call. I mean, what good would calling God do? I mean, if someone hears you, someone help you.
So you'd pick up your cell phone and you wouldn't dial G-O-D, you'd dial 911. I get it.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's an argument. You know, I don't even want to say it's an argument. It's really just your belief system. You know,
that's right. You're not going to convince me not to believe in a supernatural being that controls the universe. But you got to understand this about me. I do not believe God is omnipotent. I believe God is omnipresent. You know, there's a big difference.
That he's everywhere at all times, but he doesn't know everything.
See, many years ago, I went through a whole soul searching where I was about to become a total atheist. And I'd ask myself, how could a little child suffer from leukemia like this? How could a little child have cancer and suffer so violently? Why is it that evil men seem to thrive and get away with murder and rape and killing hundreds of thousands of people, while the innocent children, sometimes you go to a back ward of cancer and you see suffering amongst children? I said, what kind of God is there in heaven with a thing like this? And I found a book on this. It was written by I believe it was a Reform rabbi, and he was more a philosopher, and he said that if he believed God was omnipotent but not omnipresent, he would cease believing because he would not accept the God that was so cruel.
I guess I got to apologize. And when you say omnipresent, you mean that he's everywhere at all times or what? I mean, what's the difference between...
I believe that God's work is apparent everywhere. If I'm sitting in my radio studio looking out of the window and I see a bush, and I see an airplane, and I see the breeze, and I see a bird, okay? These are all manifestations of God to me.
Okay.
To me. It doesn't mean I see a spiritual being walking around who's going to wind up in my living room. I'm not Jimmy Carter. I don't believe he's going to show up in a white robe in my living room and I have to drink strychnine in order to prove it.
That's all the proof you need that there is a God, is because there are these things that are present that you see every day.
Yes. In other words, how could this have happened by accident?
I think that there's many, many things, and I think you'd agree with this, there's many, many things in the world that cannot be explained by us. I think that man is, you know, pretty low on the...
Wait, but you just touched again on something you've struggled with all your life, and I agree with you. There are many things we can't understand. So what do you do at that moment when you reach a point you can't understand? What do you turn to? I don't understand it, and that's enough for you?
Well, no, I try to study as much as I can of things that have actually happened and people that have lived in the world and experienced what is to experience in the world and maybe what they're... I kind of see it as a study that you spend your whole life trying to...
Look, we're not going to change each other's mind. A belief is a faith. That's all there is. It's a faith and period. You can't prove it. It's a faith. That's why it's called faith-based.
In this horrible, disgusting world with what goes on every day, how can you have faith in this being? Even if there is a God, say that there is a God. If there is a God, how could he be such an incredibly cruel being to allow what happen in the world? You know how there was...
I have asked the same question. I've gone right there. I'm not different than Mother Teresa, who doubted God's existence at times in her life, but still trekked along on the path of God. Because there's no alternative. I cannot take myself off this path at this point in my life. It's impossible.
You know the story of Noah's Ark, obviously. Flood, you know, because everything was so evil in the world that he needed to wash it clean, basically, and start over. You can't tell me that after all these thousands of years after that things are not 10,000 times worse than they were back then. And
yeah, but who says there's not going to be another flood?
There could be, but it's been so long. I mean, there's just no...
Yeah, it's been a long time. That's why I have survival food on a hillside house somewhere.
I'm with you. I mean, I do think it's probably coming, but I think we're more likely to destroy ourselves before that actually happens. But I just...
Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. I want to ask you something. You've got my curiosity. Were you raised in any religion?
I was raised as a Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. I was confirmed in the Catholic religion, although at confirmation I was right towards the time of not, you know, of really falling out of belief. But
what made you a lapsed Catholic? Something happened in your life? What happened?
You know, I was the weird kid that was like 9 or 10 years old in Catholic. You know, if you're in Catholic schooling, you go to church probably 2 or 3 times a week. And so I would sit in church and the priest would want us to be involved. So he would ask us questions and I would be the weird kid that stood up and said, okay, look, you know, if there is a God, then, you know, why does the bad things happen? Blah, blah, blah. And they never had
yes.
an answer for me. And
all right. No. Hey, that happens in every religion. Every religion has kids who ask these questions. You're not the weird one. You're the smart one. You're the one who challenges authority. I understand that, but I've been that way all my life.
Right. I felt weird because there was no other child, and in fact, I was laughed at for even.
See, here's the thing about it. Do you do things in your life that you're ashamed of? Things that you really wish you didn't do?
Of course.
Okay. So who do you apologize to for that?
There is nobody to apologize to.
Don't you do any mea culpa, saying, "God, I'm sorry, I've sinned. I can't help myself."
No.
Well, what do you say to yourself? What do you say to yourself at that point?
You know what? I don't. I don't have those kind of internal monologues. I basically try to live my life. You know, I feel that the Ten Commandments are a great way to live. I think that, you know, all of the things that they list are things that you should probably try to do.
Did you say the Six Commandments? You're sounding like Anthony Weiner now.
No, I said the Ten Commandments.
I'm joking. Come on. Because most Democrats believe in Four Commandments.
If you listen to George Carlin, it should really be like two, because a lot of them overlap
each other. No, but most Democrats believe in Four Commandments. Well, it's an interesting conversation we've had so far, Mark. We haven't changed each other's position, and nor did we try to. We were like gentlemen having a discussion, which is the object of a discussion, which is not really to move the other guy, but just hear the other guy out. Would you agree with me on that?
Absolutely, yeah. I listen to you every day. I do love your show a lot, and I really do believe that you are just an incredibly intelligent person. I can't believe the radio is where you landed up, you know, from being a professor and being all these things that you could have been or have done in your life, that you didn't go into a different path, and you're basically...
Well, I know that it's very interesting, but I was blocked in my desires to make a life in academia because I was a white male, although my credentials were the best on earth. They were only choosing people who were of a certain, let's say, stripe. But that's a long time ago. I have a large classroom every day with 8 to 10 million listeners a week. You can do the math. I mean, the audience is bigger in one probably 10-minute period than I would have had in my entire life as a professor. So things worked out very well. Also, the sale of the books is great. I have no complaints on that level at all. I'm not sitting here grousing about what happened. It was all, and I'm going to say this something now you're not going to believe, it was all God's will. See, I actually believe that it was all God's will. God did not want me to be limited to be a professor. He wanted to be the voice of reason on the air.
Savage.
Albany, New York, Andrew. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. I just wanted to let you know your book, Abuse of Power, has a very, very special place in my heart.
Why?
Well, I was reading it on September 22nd there when my son was born, my first child with my wife, and I read it all the time we were in the hospital and finished
wow.
it when I got home.
Well, I guess it'll remain an important... I guess it'll remain an important, touchstone in your life in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I love the book, of course, but just that it was that part of the special part.
I remember where I was when my second child was born. I was just reflecting on it. My wife went into the hospital, right? And I wasn't at the hospital yet because we didn't know exactly when. I went to the golf course. Now, I don't golf. This is the funny part. I'm not a golfer. I'm not a golfer at all. But for some weird reason, I drove out to a golf course way out in the country just to get my mind cleared up. And I was like, I think hitting on driving range at the golf course when I got the call. And I raced all the way into San Francisco to Kaiser Hospital, which was about an hour away. I remember to this day. It's funny. You do remember what you were doing, incidentally, at the time. I by the way, I've never gone on a golf course since.
Savage.
There's a rumor going around radio that there are people calling into certain shows that are paid to do so. Now, I'm going to assure you right now, first of all, before I start this discussion, that I do not, nor does my syndicator pay anybody to call my show to pretend that they're calling in to, you know, create any startling kind of reactions. But we learned that there actually are people who are hired as actors who are auditioning for a company called Premier On Call, and then they join a roster of ready-to-work actors, and they're paid $40 an hour, and they call in, allegedly, some real great shows out there, such as Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and Sean Hannity, allegedly. Now, I can't believe this is true, so we looked into this. We know that the people who are putting out the story are left-wing fanatics. This story that, you know what I'm talking about yet? Ladies and gentlemen, let's start from the top. This is the Savage Nation. We are talking about an alleged scandal that some of the top conservative shows in radio, or they're all top, all the shows in radio that are top are conservative. You got Rush number one, Hannity number two because he filled in for him and the wall banger, you know, got lucky. And then I'm number three. And then, of course, the hemorrhoid, well, you know, we know where he's going, Mr. Blackboard. But the fact is, I don't use callers, you know, that I pay for. But the question is, if this is true, where did this originate from? So we looked into this story, and it turns out that Premier Radio does have an audition request form online, and you could fill it out with your voice information. Please describe your voice, include local or native accent. Adjectives might include gruff, light, clean, crisp, high, deep, textured. And then you request an audition to audition for Premier Radio. And then if you pass, you get paid to call Rush Limbaugh, allegedly, and a wall banger, and whichever question they give you. Well, here's what they say. It says, Premier On Call is our new custom caller service. We supply voice talent to make your on-air calls, improvise your scenes, or deliver your scripts. Using our simple online booking tool, blah, 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 especially the kind of voice you need. And unless you request it, you won't hear the same voice again for at least 2 months, ensuring the authenticity of your programming for avid listeners. So if this is true, this is quite scandalous. Michael Harrison, the editor of Talkers magazine. Talkers is the talk radio world's leading trade publication. So Harrison of Talkers said he knew nothing of this particular service, but was not altogether surprised to hear that it was in place. There was, he said, a tradition of creating fake phone calls for the sake of entertainment on some of the funny shows, shock jock shows, in other words, blah, blah, blah. In other words, like a Howard Stern show. So, okay, so we looked into the people putting out this rumor, and it came originally from a so-called Jewish website called Tablet. And whenever I hear a website, a Jewish website, I know right away it's usually a left-wing fanatic, and we looked into this grunt. Sure enough, the contributors to this website that put out this story about fake callers are all left-wing fanatics. You've got Victor Navasky, who was once a publisher of The Nation magazine, which is a communist publication, and he's now publisher emeritus, so that fits. The author of the article is Leil Leibovitz, and this man apparently spends more time playing video games than he does drinking coffee. Then, so in other words, you've got left-wing fanatics attacking the conservatives again. Let's go to the Savage Nation callers. Helen in Georgia, you make the show. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, what a privilege to speak with you. I am calling you because I recall your story when you talked about your angel intercedents, the black angel, the person that was almost going to run you over with a bicycle.
Oh, my God. I was just stepping off the curb on the Embarcadero in San Francisco, and a bicyclist was speeding in the wrong direction and almost killed me. I got into a shouting match with him, and the thug was coming towards me with evil intent when a black angel appeared on the street and intervened and try to speak reason to the two men, and then disappeared into the air. I remember that very well. So tell me why you're thinking of that tonight.
I'm calling because when you told that story, I have a book. There's a woman here that claims that angels come to her and she sketches them. And in this book that I have is a picture of a black angel, kind of like a Jimi Hendrix-looking thing with sort of some white flecks, you know, in the big hair.
I swear to God, he looked like Jimi Hendrix and he had white flecks in his hair. Remember I said that?
Yes, I do. And if I can get an address, I'll make...
Wow. No, I believe that angels exist. I swear to you. I know I'm a man with a science background and all. I have reason to believe angels exist. I know the devil exists. I just turned the TV on. There they are with lipstick and high heels. And the eyes, I swear to you. Yeah. Stay on the line. Guys, give her the address for the Talk Radio Network office. I want to see that picture. Can I tell you a quick side story about an angel? I know you don't want to hear it. I got to tell you this. I'm trying to, like, divorce it, though, of the actual people because I don't want to embarrass them. Okay, I'll start with a stranger told someone I know that she was giving birth in a hospital, and during the most difficult moments of her pregnancy, a nun appeared. Her name was Mother. She helped soothe the woman who was giving birth and then disappeared from the waiting room thereafter. And a day later, when the woman, you know, was recovering with her baby, she asked who the nun was, and they said to her, there was no nun here. I will tell you that I heard the very same story from another woman within my own family, and that we looked for that woman named Mother, and she was nowhere to be found. And I'll tell you another story about a nun. I was in the hospital last year with a rather minor nothing, but it scared me anyway. CAT scan, blah, blah, blah. In the recovery room, there came a nun who was very kind to me. And when I got out of the emergency room, she was leaving. She was in the parking lot. I ran after her. I ran up to her. And I said to her, who are you? What is your name? Can I help you? I reached for the money in my pocket. I offered to give her whatever I had in my pocket. She wouldn't take it. I said, where can I reach you? And she gave me the name of a nunnery somewhere. I don't know where she was. I called it. They never heard of her. You think we're all crazy? Well, think about it and get back to me. Savage.